The next case, number 25-2033, United States ex rel. James R. Berkeley versus Ocean State LLC et al. At this time, would counsel for the appellant please introduce himself on the record to begin?
Good morning, Your Honors. Eric Renner for the relator plaintiff, James Berkeley. May it please the court, may I please have 2 minutes for rebuttal?
Right.
Thank you. Your Honors, this appeal presents one question, reviewed de novo. Did qualifying public sources disclose substantially the same allegations or transactions as Berkeley's claims? And they did not. The public record showed three things. That these companies took PPP loans, that New Harbor owned stakes in the companies, and that New Harbor managed assets for its investors totaling roughly $500 million. Every one of those facts is fully consistent with lawful conduct. Not one public source disclosed the contradiction that makes a certification false. Accessible New Harbor liquidity these borrowers declined, or PPP ineligibility from the absence of an affiliation waiver. Under the familiar Springfield Terminal formula, which this court has applied, public X without public Y does not disclose Z, the fraud. And appellees have conceded the point. They call the inferences from the public facts based on unfounded assumptions added by Berkeley. But an assumption that has to be added was not disclosed. And if an assumption is unfounded, then the inference is not plausible. And the error is independently fatal as to New Harbor. The public disclosure bar is applied on a claim-by-claim basis. The statute says so, the Supreme Court's Rockwell decision says so, and this court in its Cunningham decision applied that when dismissed two claims of the fraud scheme, but remanded as to one.
So your point, though, is that they, when you say they basically added, facts had to be added to, for me to say, why is this a fraud? I would have to tell you a story that would have some facts in the public record and some facts outside the public record. And if they don't, I think the point that kind of resonated with me in your reply was, if you made up facts that don't exist, that's a different problem, not this problem. That's a 12b6, Rule 9, Rule 56, some other problem, but it's not a public bar problem.
Correct, Your Honor. And we're here only on the public disclosure bar. You know, the district court did not reach a Rule 56 determination. So
what facts did your client add?
Well, as a kind of predicate matter, Your Honor, I would say that that's not what the statute tests. What the statute tests is what did the public disclosures reveal? So, and one of the issues we take with the district court is that the district court looked at.
I thought you say he does add facts, like the
fact absolutely
that New Harbor's money was available to Ocean State, like that. Would that be a necessary fact?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
To the fraud that they had no money?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Yes. I just note that under the statute, the relevant inquiry is what did the disclosures provide? But we absolutely take the position that Mr. Berkeley did indeed add facts. And there's really three of them, I think. It's one is that these borrowers had the ability to access New Harbor liquidity. All the disclosures of New Harbor's assets under management, all that says is, hey, we have, you know, all these investors in various funds, and, you know, we manage assets of roughly $500 million. It says nothing about whether these borrowers could access that money, but declined it because they found it preferable to take public PPP money. He also added the key predicate fact for the kind of other claim, which is the ineligibility for lack of affiliation waiver. I mean, the critical fact there is that these borrowers did not qualify for a waiver of the affiliation rules and therefore were ineligible. Simply having public disclosures that might show that the total number of employees across affiliates is above 500 does not answer the question, does not lead to the plausible inference that fraud was committed, because many borrowers could have been eligible based on an affiliation waiver. So that those two facts were added. And of course, we added facts regarding the separate New Harbor claim, that New Harbor had direct and controlling involvement in these borrowers' loans. So I would say all of those facts were not in the public.
Just to follow up, though, those seem like conclusions rather than facts. So I'm just wondering, what specific facts do you think your client, because as I understand the tests, we compare what your client presented to what was, and whether it's substantially similar to what was available in the public record. So in terms of facts versus conclusions, what do you think in terms of actual facts other than the conversation or the email with Mr. Rosselli? Do I have the name correctly? Rosselli? Yeah. What other facts do you think he added to the analysis, to the mix?
Well, I think those are the allegations pleaded in the complaint. So those are facts that are alleged in the complaint. And so whether or not those facts are ultimately proven is a, you know, that goes...
You would say a fact is the money was available to... No, New Harbor's money was available to Ocean State.
That's an absolutely, that's a fact that we allege in the complaint. And the Springfield Terminal ruling, which is, you know, cited across, you know, across multiple circuits, addresses this specific point in a footnote. But it says, you know, we're only looking at the public disclosure bar. To the extent, the allegations in the complaint are not specifically definite, that's a Rule 9b question. To the extent it's a it's a 12, might be a 12B6 question, or ultimately whether there's proof for these allegations, that's a Rule 56 question. But those are questions that are handled not by the public disclosure bar, but by, you know, the usual rules of civil procedure. So those are separate questions. So I would, you know, hopefully have answered your question. I think what you might call facts are the allegations pleaded. But I do want to drive home the point that, you know, even if you were to find, which obviously I don't think you should, but even if you were to find that there were some public disclosures that applied to the three borrowers, the New Harbor claim stands alone. And, you know, the statute, the Supreme Court, and this court have all made clear that you analyze on a claim-by-claim basis, and that's what we say was not done here. There's simply no public disclosure having anything to do with New Harbor's role in these application, in these false claims, the applications, and the necessary predicate facts.
Aren't they substantially similar to the other previous ones?
So I would say that that would be defining the kind of transaction, I think, in too general a terms, which the D.C. Circuit recently said you shouldn't do. If you look at the claim against New Harbor, is it that by its direct involvement and supervision in connection with the oversight of these companies and their PPP loans, it violated the specific portion of the False Claims Act that prohibits non-submitting entities from causing false claims to be submitted. So the necessary fact for New Harbor is that it caused the submission of false claims. And you know, that claim was never analyzed, and there is no public disclosure. And this court in Cunningham said it faulted and remanded the district court on one of the three aspects of the kind of general fraud scheme because, quote, the district court did not meticulously compare the allegations to the public disclosures. So I think at a minimum, the New Harbor claim should be remanded.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. At this time, would counsel for the appellees please introduce himself on the record to begin?
Good morning. Rex Manning on behalf of appellees. The public disclosure bar turns on the transactions as alleged in the action. That's the statutory text, and here the transactions as alleged rested on a handful of facts. Receipt of PPP loans, New Harbor's investment in Ocean State and others, assets under management, and employee counts of affiliated companies. And the court can see that at pages 92 and 95 of the appendix, paragraphs 164 and 178. That is where Berkeley outlines the facts that he used to infer fraud and he pleaded to compose the transactions as alleged. On necessity, the only facts that he identified at paragraph 164 were New Harbor's, quote, significant financial resources, end quote, and its 84% stake in Ocean State. And on eligibility, the only fact that he identified at paragraph 178 is, quote, the extended affiliation, end quote, which he said made it impossible to meet size standards. And all of those facts were publicly disclosed, which this court can also see at pages 43, 45, and 50 through 52 of the appendix, footnotes 3 through 20, where Berkeley cited the sources where he obtained those facts.
Those facts by themselves don't equal the fraud. So the fraud, whether explicit or implicit, requires putting other facts into the story. Like you, what you just told me, which I accept are publicly available, doesn't bring you to it being a fraud. What brings it to a fraud is, for the first claim, the money was available to Ocean State to access from New Harbor. For it to be a fraud as to the second, they didn't have a waiver. So those facts are, seem to be predicates or part of the story that bring you to the fraud. So don't those have to be public too, or do I not understand that right?
No, Your Honor, not they do not need to be going beyond what Berkeley pleaded, because the transactions as alleged is the focus in the complaint and the statute. And so even if we all agree that there might need to be something more, and I would submit that, Judge Rickleman, as you noted, access to liquidity and ineligibility for the waiver affiliation waiver would both be conclusions, but we're focused on the facts as Berkeley pleaded them.
It's a fraud? Isn't that the conclusion? Maybe that's where I'm getting to.
That's one of the conclusions, but certainly access to liquidity is also itself a conclusion that you would need facts to establish. But the more important point is that on appeal, Berkeley cannot run through from his theory of the case, and he cannot have it both ways. When we were in the district court, we made a motion to dismiss. We raised Rule 9. We raised Rule 12. And in response, Berkeley argued successfully that his allegations, as he pleaded them, sufficiently and plausibly stated fraud. He won that. He cannot now come to this court and say the same very facts that he used to build his claims below were, in fact, not enough to infer fraud in the first place. Put another way, Berkeley cannot lower the public disclosure bar threshold on appeal by saying that the assumptions that he used and the inferences that he used were not something that public sources disclosed, because assumptions and inferences are not facts, do not themselves reveal fraud, and therefore fall outside the definition of transaction, as this court recognized in Ondas, which is focused just on facts. Put another way, if Berkeley used an assumption or an inference that narrowed the scope of the transaction as alleged, and therefore narrowed the universe of what public sources needed to disclose in order for the transaction itself to be disclosed. And the consequence of that is not necessarily only a Rule 9 or a Rule 12 argument. It's two points. There are public disclosure bar ramifications, because a pleading weakness cannot in turn become a public disclosure bar strength. So that's just the focus on, you know, point one. Was there a disclosure to begin with? It's the transaction as alleged. You can look at the complaint, paragraphs 164, 178. You see the facts.
You're saying if it's a four-step, let's just use the first one. It's a four-step process. One, there was a PPP loan. Two, or maybe it's a three-step. They had New Harbor's investment. Let's say three, they were short on money. And then let's say all that's public. Four, they had access to New Harbor's money. And if there are no facts about that or information about that, and they just assert that based on, I am an experienced person in venture capital, then that's no longer a fact. It's some other thing. It's an assertion. It's a conclusion. And so it's within the public bar, because facts, I'll just call them one, two, three, were in the public. And what could have been fact four was never a fact. It was just an assertion, a conclusion. And so that it still is within the public bar? Because is that how it works?
Yes, Your Honor. As this court recognized in Ondas, a transaction, the term from the statute, means facts. And so you're focused on just...
Instead of using his assertion for the last piece of the puzzle, he said... You know, there's it's just pled as it's from some private information. Then it's different.
Then it's different. Yes, because that would be a different fact, and then you would ask whether public sources disclose that fact. And if I may briefly also address the arguments with respect to the New Harbor claim, on that point, there's a couple of things to keep in mind. So first, the transaction is the same. It's the same misrepresentation. It's the same supposed true state of play. The only difference that Berkeley identifies is causation, and causation doesn't change the public disclosure bar analysis for three reasons. First, causation is not a fact either, and there's a stark difference between the elements that a plaintiff must prove to win an FCA claim and the elements or facts that a plaintiff must allege to plausibly infer fraud, and the public disclosure bar is focused narrowly on the transaction, the alleged misrepresentation, the alleged true state of play. Second, if causation fits into the public disclosure bar analysis at all, it fits into the original source exception. And this court can look to its decision in Winkleman at the end of the opinion where it discussed the potential role of scienter, and there it recognized that there could be a case in which a transaction was publicly disclosed and there was similarity. But a plaintiff nevertheless came forward with information on knowledge to show the misrepresentation was made knowingly rather than negligently. And the court said it could possibly be that that information would be enough to trigger the original source exception. And that same logic applies to causation. If causation fits in, it's under original source, but the court does not need to go that far because Berkeley has disclaimed the exception up, down, and sideways, both below and on appeal. And finally, even if the court disagreed with everything that I just said on causation, the outcome would still be the same because the only additional fact that Berkeley pleaded to support his causation allegations was Mr. Roselli's dual role at Ocean State and New Harbor. And as we showed at page 66 of our brief, there is a press release from New Harbor discussing the sale of Ocean State that mentions Roselli's dual roles. And so even that fact, if the court wanted to consider causation, was publicly disclosed by a qualifying source, and so the transactions would be substantially the same. The last point that I wanted to touch on briefly is the third part of the public disclosure bar analysis, substantial similarity. And on that point, I think it's helpful to take a step back and use a different term that this court has used previously in Winkleman, talking about scheme. And I actually agree with my friend on the other side that the Cunningham opinion is helpful in thinking about substantial similarity, although I disagree about the implications for this case. When we're looking at scheme, you're looking at various ways that fraud could have occurred, and there the court found that there was not substantial similarity in one of the three alleged methods of fraud, which was unnecessary frequency of medical testing versus double billing or unnecessary confirmation testing. And so the takeaway here is when you're looking at substantial similarity and you're asking about scheme, Berkeley has never argued below or on appeal that his allegations revealed a different scheme than what public sources disclosed. Nor could he, because he pulled all of the information that he used to make those allegations directly from public sources themselves. And so, in conclusion, if the public disclosure bar prohibits anything, it prohibits a plaintiff from alleging fraud by copying and pasting facts from the internet. Berkeley's arguments to the contrary collide with and cannot pass through the statutory text, transactions as alleged in the action, this court's published precedent in Winkleman and Ondas, and the public disclosure bar's purpose, which is to limit QI-TAM plaintiffs to pursuing fraud that the government itself could not have uncovered. This court should affirm.
Thank you. Thank you. 2 minutes rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Please introduce yourself again.
Eric Renner for the relator appellant, James Berkeley. First, The causation claim relative to New Harbor, this court recently acknowledged that that is a separate, distinct, viable claim in its recent Regeneron decision, in which it affirmed the Hutchinson decision. The causation claim stands alone against New Harbor. That's a distinct portion of the statute, and it's a distinct claim here. When they're talking about what Mr. Berkley, what he looked at, what he reviewed, or you know, what he based his what they call assumptions on, that's the derived from test that this court has rejected in Ondas. What Mr. Berkley looked at is not the test. What is the test is what do the disclosures themselves reveal? And if you just look at what the public sources reveal, that does not lead to a plausible inference of fraud. It's only when you add these assumptions that they call unfounded, only then, you know, do you have the predicate facts that would turn otherwise lawful conduct into fraud. All of this court's prior decisions, Ondas, Poteet, Winkleman, they all involved either a direct accusation of fraud or both the misrepresented state of facts and the true state of facts that would lead to the contradiction. You know, it had the public X and the public Y, which led to the Z, the fraud. I mean, here, they want to have the Y plus an assumption in order to get to the Z. That's not the test. Cunningham, it involved one fraud scheme with three different claims or aspects. And this court said their public disclosure revealed the aspects for two of the claims or the essential elements for two of the aspects. But for one of the distinct aspects, the public disclosures did not reveal the fraud, and then the district court did not, quote, meticulously compare the public disclosures to the allegations, and this court remanded aspect three. And again, at a bare minimum, I would ask that the New Harbor claim was never publicly disclosed, and there are no disclosures revealing that claim, and so I would ask at a minimum that the case be remanded as to the New Harbor claim.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes argument.